Call this meeting of the Community and Regional Affairs to order at 8:03 a.m. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us this morning. Today we will be having public testimony regarding House Bill 22. Thank you, everyone, who's attended here in person, and I see we have a number of callers online this afternoon. So just to set some ground rules, I think we're going to do 3 minutes for testimony. I have a stopwatch right here on my phone that I'll go ahead and let you know when that time is allotted. I suppose before I do anything first, though, we should probably take roll here. So just note that we do have Donna Mears, we do have Tom McKay, we do have Rebecca Hemshoot, we have Justin Ruffridge and Vice Chair Kevin McCabe. Representative Josiah Puckettuck has been excused for the week. I suppose to get started, we'll start with testimony here in the room. And I see here that we have Representative Josephson. Are you testifying this morning?
No.
No? Okay.
I can answer questions, of course. Let's do that.
Sure. Chair McCabe has requested that we do questions first. So, Representative Josephson, if you could please come forward.
Andy Josephson, District 13, the sponsor of the bill.
Thank you.
Bill 22.
And thanks, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Josephson, I do have a number of questions. At the last meeting, you had sent some information and had some staff send some information. I also note that this bill is substantially the same as HB 55 last year, which I'm holding two fiscal notes, pretty significant fiscal notes that are not attached to HB 22. Is it just not time, or did they not do a fiscal note? I have a thing from a Buck, an analysis from Buck Global LLC that talks about a pretty significant fiscal note for this bill, and you said the other day there was no fiscal note, that this was pretty conservative. So I guess my first question would be, what happened to the fiscal note between last year and this year?
Through the chair, Mr. McCabe, with great respect, it's very important to not misquote me. I mean, you're welcome to do it. It's a free country. But I didn't say there was no fiscal note. I said the opposite. I said there was a $6 million cost. I'm not in charge of fiscal notes.
Okay.
So that's my answer.
Fair enough.
They'll come in as they come in.
Yeah, I certainly could have misheard you I think what you probably said, and maybe I should have listened first, and I apologize if I misquoted you, but I think you sort of indicated that it was a very conservative bill and had no cost maybe to the state, which is different than a fiscal note. I admit that.
Through the chair. We can have this conversation again, and I'm happy to do it. It is a conservative bill. It is a conservative bill, and I appreciate the opportunity. It's conservative in that it only covers 7.5% of all public employees, including teachers and municipal employees. It's conservative in that there have been multiple actuarials done, including the state's own actuarial, multiple actuarials, and the stakeholders have done actuarials. It's conservative in that it has multiple triggers that can reduce the amount of the pension and can increase the cost to the active employee to pay for his or her own pension. It's conservative in that it's a high five, not a high three. And the list goes on and on and on. This plan and the documents we've provided to you, I would assert, prove that this is a net cost savings to governments writ large across the board. Yes, it's $6 million a year because it slows marginally the contribution of the new cohort toward the unfunded liability that they didn't create. Some of them were toddlers when it was created. Some of them were unborn. So, yes, it slows that very, very marginally. We think it's about 6 months over the span of the amortized period. This is a conservative bill that has been vetted. And I would note, and I saw your op-ed, I appreciate it, and I heard your comments yesterday. This is not rushed. This has been worked on by three Republican members of the State House prior to me, including a former majority leader, including a former rules chair. So this is a seriously, intensely vetted bill. Thank you.
Follow up?
Please.
Thank you, Representative Josephson, and I really appreciate that in the explanation. So I'm also a little concerned with the numbers, so I'm looking at the DPS that were provided to us last night by the chair's staff. And so I'm looking at the DPS survey that says that retirement is the major reason that DPS employees or that was claimed by someone that retirement was one of the reasons or the major reason that DPS employees were leaving. And the survey doesn't show that. It says a defined retirement benefit package is of concern to 9% of the people, where leadership is a 21% reason that they were leaving, and better pay and benefits was a 10%. So the survey doesn't bear out what we said the other day, that for the reason that DPS employees are leaving. I'm also concerned with the numbers from APDEA, where they include a patrol car in the cost of training a new recruit. I'm pretty sure that my company didn't include the cost of a 747 when they put in how much it cost to train me. Also notice that the fire department didn't include a fire engine when they put their cost in for training fire departments. So I'm very concerned that the numbers that we're presenting to the public are erroneous when we say that this is the reason, this is the cost. I think we said last year $100,000 to $200,000 to train a new employee. And based on what I saw last night, from the numbers that came to us, that's just not true. So is it possible, do you think, from the DPS and from the fire department and from APDEA to get some real numbers instead of these sort of fake numbers so we can make an intelligent decision?
Sure. Mr. Chair, through the chair, Vice Chair McCabe, it's 8:10 a.m. on a Tuesday. You have just, in a very derogatory fashion, attacked as essentially deceitful every public safety agency in the state. Is that what you want to do this morning?
Well, through the chair, I appreciate it, Representative Josephson, and I appreciate your comments, but we have to make a decision here that's going to affect the lives of Alaskans for decades and the budget of Alaskans for decades, and the numbers that we're getting to make those decisions on are incorrect. So am I supposed to just sit here and tell my 18,000 or 20,000 constituents that I made a decision to vote for HB 22, which is obviously an issue based on a set of incorrect numbers or a set of numbers that are not proper?
Through the chair, one of the sets of numbers comes from Commissioner Cockrell's office last week.
I understand.
So you're talking to an agent of the governor, and if you have a problem with him, I would call him directly, sir. And I also would note that I don't agree that the charts refer to only 9% concerned with that. There's another chart that says return to defined benefit was a 23% factor. So these are, as I noted, and I said this in my opening statement last week, these exit interviews are somewhat ambiguous. But the idea that, and that's just the nature, I didn't make the pie chart, sir. But the idea that this is not a problem here, we'll just have to take the testimony today and we'll see what the members think.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Representative Hemphill, I saw you raised your hand.
Yeah, I have a couple questions as well, if you're available to stay. So do I say through the chair? Thank you. Okay, so Representative Josephson, through the chair, I'd like to understand more about pensions in general. Sorry, I'm new at this. What are examples of professions where a pension is offered? So I understand public safety is what we're working on today. I know as a teacher that I was offered a pension option. Where else might one find a pension?
Through the chair. Well, I think that as a history major and a history certified teacher still, and a history sort of amateur scholar, we would find that after the Great Depression, there were more and more, I don't know that they called them that then, but defined benefits. We saw that into the early and mid-70s, the middle class broadly speaking, thrived, and now their earning power has been eroded. And I attribute some of that to the elimination of some of these pensions. But the specific answer to your question would be the United States military, including, I think, the United States Coast Guard, offers full pensions. I would be stunned if 20 years of service in the military, you didn't get a pension. Certainly postal workers. Well, I'll tell you, here's what I would tell you through the chair, Ms. Hemshute, Representative Hemshute. 49 states public safety employees get pensions. I guess we think we're the only ones that don't need to do that. In almost every state, I think it's 48 or 49, teachers get public pensions or public employee pensions. But it's variable. Judges get them. Legislators who were here before 2006 get them. There are certainly fewer of them. But unions have them in their trusts, and I'm far from an expert on that. Those are sort of my answers.
So would it be fair to say that a pension is a way of distributing the risk of retirement? So the state bears a better chance of withstanding. I have to save as if I could live to be 100, and that's a risk that I have to bear. But a pension is a way to sort of take the larger group and distribute that risk and place some of the risk on the state.
Through the chair, that is eloquently put and absolutely accurate. And what's unique about this class is they are known to take bullets for us and die in fires. That's what's unique about them.
Okay, so...
And of course, they can't pick and choose their customers. They have to respond to all the calls.
And then through the chair, Representative Josephson, we will be burdening the state for decades to come if this passes. I noticed that Public Safety Department has a 17.4% vacancy rate. Do you have any idea what kind of burden that places on the state?
Through the chair, Representative Hemshute, it's an enormous burden. So... setting aside this vehicle issue, the cost to train these folks are between $100 and in excess of $200,000. So cities and states are both suffering by having to churn up this conveyor belt of training and retraining. I think that there's probably more overtime costs, and I'm not the expert that can talk about that. But just to cover shifts, that must be true, and I'm told it's true. The cost is in lack of experience. It's in all of those things. It's in knowing the community that you serve. So that is a very high rate of vacancy.
So with
and by the way, I wanted to comment. In my view, a $6 million burden is insubstantial. Insubstantial. So for example, if we took, well, I'll give you an example, if I might. Each $100, Mr. Chairman, of the permanent fund dividend is about $65 million. It would pay for the entire increase of this bill spanning 11-plus years. So if instead of receiving $3,200 each, we received $3,100, this bill would be covered for in excess of 11 years. Thanks.
Thank you. I still have a couple more questions. Okay. So I'm wondering if some of that expense of training people, if you can answer this, you may not know the answer, but I'm curious if some of that expense is, my niece is married to someone who's training to become a public safety officer. And he is actually on the job and getting trained. So would that $100,000 potentially include the salary that the person is paid as they're training up to higher levels? So he's able to do certain aspects of the job right now, but he has to go through the academy. He'll be paid for his time during the academy. As a teacher, I think you pointed out in your own career, you bore the cost. The people we're talking about are trained while employed. So is that potentially part of that cost?
Through the chair, it very well could be. And again, we can find that answer for you. But we probably have experts on the line, I know we do, who could answer that immediately.
And I want to be clear, I don't question it. I just think that we can clarify it more, and I'd like to understand it myself. And then I guess my last question is tied to your previous visit here. So through the chair, if half the population of Alaska departed the state, would we be able to afford these pensions? Because I think that's what happened in Detroit. When half the people in Detroit left their community, they could no longer pay their pensioners. So would a scenario like that apply in Alaska as well? And can you envision a scenario in which half of our state leaves?
Through the chair, Representative Himshut, I take your point. The answer is no, I can't envision that, because that would be fewer people than when I was born here in 1964. I also think that these comparisons to Detroit and Illinois are so anomalous, or rather so lacking in sufficient basis, for lack of a better term, that that they have no value, that the comparisons aren't valuable. I've been to Detroit, but I've only read about its problems municipally and otherwise, and that there's been a flight from the city and that sort of thing. But no, I don't foresee that happening. And by the way, again, this is, if the legislature and the House last year by a vote of 25-15 was eager to do this, this is, as I said to the press, the sweet spot. It's a $6 million chance, I think a very likely chance, at getting a much better retained DPS and related workforce.
So I have one more question through the chair, if I may. I'm still looking at that 17.4% vacancy rate, and I'm putting that together with the letter we received this morning that said a state-funded 2016 study of the Alaska Department of Corrections found, quote, our analysis indicated, am I allowed to read? Thank you. Our analysis indicated that a number of facilities are currently operating with staffing levels insufficient to meet basic security operational requirements. And so in teaching, when we have vacancies, we're opening schools and beginning a school year with unfilled positions, which either increases class sizes to an unmanageable amount, or we bring in folks who are not really prepared or capable of the work that we're asking them to do. Do you have any sense, with a 17.4 vacancy rate in our Department of Public Safety, what are the consequences to the community of that? Have you heard any examples of an increase in crime or an inability to meet the fire protection needs of the community?
Through the chair, I actually did a fire 101 ops in late August. And I was proud and happy to learn that the Anchorage medical community has the greatest respect for the first responder, paramedic, and fire responders, and views them as incredibly competent. I think that we have an ongoing problem in rural Alaska. I've seen this firsthand. I lived in a Yupik village for 3 years. I lived in a Inupiat village for 2 years. I think I saw a trooper once per year in the Yupik village of about 272, and there was an adjoining village of 150. I think that, and I mentioned this to the OMB chief yesterday, that we need to invest even more in housing for public employees in rural Alaska. But the number of this is well known and well documented. And rural Alaska is frustrated by this. And so I think that's a reflection of some of it. I can't speak individually to each agency and what they're experiencing. Perhaps others could.
Representative McKay.
Thank you, Chairman McCormick, and good morning, everyone. And through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'll try to help you out here a little bit. On our last meeting, you didn't know the answer to the question, can a state file bankruptcy? The answer is no, a state cannot file bankruptcy, but they can default. And there are currently 8 states in America that are approaching default basically because of defined benefit programs that are driving them to default, which would be a bad situation. Obviously, credit ratings go down, and they have to find the money somewhere to pay those obligations. Some states are looking at wealth taxes and all kinds of. I think there's even a state that's looking to raise the cigar tax. So you can't file bankruptcy, but you can default, and the money's got to come from somewhere. It's not like the federal government where you print money to pay your debts. If we go with this program, there could be a problem, an unintended consequence, where if you make it more attractive in your mind for local police officers and local firemen to move up into state trooper positions and state firefighting positions, then you're hurting local communities. You're poaching from their workforces to staff these positions. I should point out that federal employees in Alaska have an attrition rate of 7.5% with a defined benefits program. And HB 22 states that the attrition rate currently for firemen and police officers is 6%. So we're below that. Also, nationally, the police turnover rate is around 11%. So our 6% may not be as bad as you let on. Now, Alaska ranks third in unfunded liability debt by percent of personal income compared to the other 50 states. So we're third. We rank sixth in debt to GDP ratio. And as we're seeing, we are losing population. Our birth rates are down. We are on a trajectory to lose population, as I think Representative Hemshute kind of referred to. We're already borrowing to pay for government. We've borrowed $16 billion approximately since 2016 to pay for government from the Constitutional Budget Reserve, Statutory Budget Reserve, and other savings accounts. And we're cutting the permanent fund dividend to the folks. And we're doing, you know, we're starting to eat into the permanent fund earnings reserve to pay for government. So I'm very hesitant to increase our cost burden in this area. I would like to have an analysis by the Director of Retirement and Benefits from the Department of Administration. I think we need to have an independent analysis of this proposal. And I think we're going to need some more time, Mr. Chairman. I think we're going to need at least a week to develop amendments. And then in closing, in my study of these retirement programs, it looks like the defined contribution plan is more favorable. It's more, I believe it's more portable, and the employees get to direct their investments where they want the money to be invested, as opposed to the defined benefit program where the state basically just decides it for them. So I'm not sure if defined benefit is the best. Maybe defined contribution would be a better program. So those are my comments, and I thank you for being here this morning, Representative Josephson.
Representative Josephson.
Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like a little liberty. Of course, Representative McKay didn't ask a question, but I'd like to just briefly respond to some of his comments. I appreciate, Representative McKay, that you want to help me out. I would note that I didn't say states could or couldn't declare bankruptcy. I said I knew that cities could. All right. The other thing is you commented that you're concerned that the state will poach from local governments in public safety. I've never heard that. In fact, I think that the pay for local governments may, in many instances, be better. So the local police officer may very well not want to go to the state trooper ranks. And besides which, this benefit would cover both local police and the state troopers. Just some other things. It's true, I want folks to understand, it's true that we spent collectively, all of us in this building, spent $15 billion of savings. But there were some benefits, Representative McKay. We didn't tax anybody during that time. And the reason we had to do that is in 1 year, rather than raising $9 billion in oil and gas revenue through tax and royalty, we received $1 billion. So short of shutting the lights off and closing every public school, and when we didn't have the courage to raise revenue, we had to take from savings. That was actually, given our circumstances, the only decision we could make. You talked about eating away the earnings reserve. I worked hard, and I just wrote a letter to the editor about this yesterday, to prevent some members of the legislature from over-consuming in violation of the law of the earnings reserve. There's a law that says you got to stop at 5%, and I've laid on the railroad tracks to do that over the objection of many, many of my colleagues. You also asked for a DRB analysis. That's the Buck actuary. That's the, or rather actuarial. There has been DRB analyses. They've engaged. We've had teleconferences and meetings with them. They've been engaged in every phase of this, beginning with Representative Cobb's bill two legislatures ago. So it's easy to say, let's do a Division of Retirement and Benefits analysis. It's done. Box checked. Those are my responses, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, thank you for those notes, Representative Josephs. And I would point out to you that a lot of Alaskans consider a reduction to their statutory PFD as a tax. So to say that we have not been taxed, a lot of people don't buy that. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If anyone has any more questions, I'd be glad to entertain them. But I just do want to note, we have a lot of folks on the line, and I think it's really important that we give them the opportunity to weigh in. And so, Representative Mears, do you have any questions? Or Representative Ruffridge, Vice Chair McCabe, please go ahead. I saw you had a question.
Thanks. And through the chair, and this will be the last one for you, Representative Josephson. So last year under HB 55 and some of the comments that I have written down, there's an article that says, notably, the state still has a $4.6 billion in unfunded PERS liabilities today, despite having no flow of new plan entrants for 15 years. And in finance, 2 days ago, I think you heard that there is now a $7 billion unfunded liability. So while I think that the Division of Retirement numbers last year were good, I think they may have changed. And I think we absolutely cannot rely on this Buck survey of 2 years ago, that we need to have some discussion with the retirement department as well as Ledge Finance. Frankly, I'd like to see them sitting there and have Mr. Painter describe to us the effects of this plan on the economy 5, 10, 15 years down the road. I think that's very important for us to get on the record for the public, frankly. As far as hiring, and last comment, and it isn't really a question, I appreciate it, but I'm looking at the Police Executive Research Forum data. It says agencies reported an overall increase in the resignation rate. This is countrywide of 18%. Among all responding police department, there was a 45% increase in retirement rate. So to me, based on what the bill says of a 6% and what you mentioned earlier, I think, or somebody, maybe Representative Himshute mentioned a 17%, it doesn't seem to me, and this is, I get it, there's nothing, you know, just because the rest of the country follows Alaska or has the same about vacancy rate, doesn't mean we shouldn't try to fix it. I understand that. But this is not a bell ringing emergency, in my opinion. We're in the same boat as the rest of the country. Yes, we need to try to fix it as best we can. But I don't think saying that we have a 6% vacancy rate and going to general quarters is necessarily the right way to do it. In fact, especially when general quarters means that we place the state and the residents in the state and our permanent fund and our permanent fund dividend on the hook for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And as you saw in my op-ed yesterday, defined benefits vaporizes when the spouse, when you pass away and the spouse passes away. If you have defined contribution, at least it, what's left of your money that you placed in retirement account over 20 years goes to the rest of your family. You control it, not the state. And you heard me say yesterday, I can't think of a worse entity on the world to control my retirement than the state of Alaska legislature or some, or a judge that's going to shed the retirement plan when the state can no longer pay for it. So okay. I appreciate it.
I promise, Mr. Chairman, very briefly, I understand you don't want government to control pensions. There's a lot of senior citizens that disagree. They want their Social Security. So leaving that alone, as to the fact that the plan dies when the first responder passes away, that's often not true because they can pay for a survivorship benefit, which comes as a charge off the top of the retirement plan. As I've said, there's been a real misunderstanding about this. This bill is in its own silo. Think of the retirement legacies as being on Mars. This bill is on Venus. They just don't intersect in any meaningful way. And that, frankly, the bill offered by my very able colleague, very intelligent colleague, Briar Hopkins, reopened the tiers. That would need some serious vetting. But incidentally, it proved to have no cost to the state, which is interesting. But I don't have a whole lot more to add than those comments.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. I think we'll go ahead and move forward now with public testimony. I do want to remind everyone we do have a hearing scheduled for Thursday, ample opportunity to ask a number of questions. Representative Josephson, thank you again. Before moving forward, I did want to recognize that we had Representative Andrew Gray with us. Andrew, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And before we get into testimony, I do want to just read off the phone numbers that folks can call into for the listening public. If you're in the Juneau area, 907-586-9085 is the number you can call. For Anchorage, the Anchorage area, you can call 907-563-9085. And then lastly, for anyone anywhere else, you can call 844-586-9085.
I apologize. May I make one other quick
question? Sure, Representative Josephson.
Andy Josephson, House District 13. The vice chair noted that the reports from the state were 2 years old. They're actually 7 months old. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. So moving on now to public testimony, I believe we have Christopher Wright here in person to testify. Christopher, if you could come forward and please state, spell your name and let us know where you represent or where you're coming from. You have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Christopher Wright. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. I am representing myself today. The views I am expressing are mine and not the department I work for, nor any boards I serve on. I am a law enforcement officer and thus a direct stakeholder in the proposed pension. I am asking you to reject a return to a pension system that will not benefit individual police officers. It is also not supported by many public safety workers and stakeholders for which it is designed. Overall, pensions are an outdated and poor way of providing retirement benefits to workers. I bring a unique perspective, work experience, and expertise on this topic. I have been a police officer for 5 years. Prior to, I worked in investment management for 20 years. I retired from Wall Street to become a police officer. I consider it an honor to serve the community I live in. Many of the stated goals of the pension plan will hurt officers. It will take away our flexibility, career growth opportunities, and life choices. The entire concept of forcing police officers to stay in a job handcuffed is an abject outcome and should rightfully be rejected by any community. My previous career was extremely rewarding as I saw my firm's clients reap the rewards of long-term investing. Much of these rewards were directly tied to the nationwide transition away from defined benefits and to defined contributions in 401k type systems. The wealth built by millions of average income Americans is directly tied to this transition. And I played a part in that over my 20-year investment management career. I was part of the project planning that moved people from pensions. Fortune 500 companies across the country and many municipalities and states transitioned away from defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans. Representative McKay earlier mentioned some of the states that have fiscal problems with these, and a lot of those are being addressed by moves to defined contribution plans. It is foolish to allow market risk to force investors into a guaranteed investment. I acknowledge that there are market risks, but the cost of any guarantee is enormous. You could go to a bank right now and get a guaranteed investment, and everyone should understand basic investing principles tell you that that's a horrible idea. The state of Alaska taxpayers and public safety workers deserve a cost-specific alternative that allows for individual responsibility and rewards. Regarding retention and many of the issues already brought up this morning, I think it's very clear that cities and states across the country are all facing hiring and retention challenges. Very important to note that those municipalities, most of them have pension plans. To suggest that this is going to solve retention issues is just incorrect. Over the last 2 years, I personally have spoken to a majority of APD officers that have left APD. And most of the reasons they leave are very personal in nature, but most importantly, they have nothing to do with the lack of a pension plan, other than possibility that they would be handcuffed to the job.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Mind if we ask a question?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. So I'm curious, you've been at APD for 5 years, you said? So obviously you went through the training and the FTOs and all that. Do you see any possible way it could have cost $200,000 or between $100,000 and $200,000 to train you?
I don't have the specific cost projections, and, you know, I'm not privy to the budgets and those type of things that APD Command has. But I would be, from what my understanding and just seeing some of the numbers that have come out, they don't seem likely accurate.
Follow up.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thank you. And so some of the numbers I saw came from APDEA, and I know that APDEA is very involved in this. Would you say that the average, and I get this is just your opinion, and I know you're here by on your own, you're not representing anybody, but does the average APDEA member support what the average what the APDEA leadership is putting forward for defined benefit? Would you, in your personal opinion, and I hate to put you on the spot, but
I'll be as frank as I can. We've had a lot of discussion this in the union over the past year. I do happen to be a union board member. I got involved in the board because I didn't think that the board was properly representing the union members. So that's why I got involved. This is one of the big issues that I think that the union leadership has been completely off base on. Frankly, I don't understand why any union would want to take away the flexibility from its members to have career growth and could to possibly leave. I don't understand what the benefit to that would be to the individual police officer. We could discuss the investment strategy of a pension versus a, but why you would want to take away that flexibility and why a union would support that baffles me. Overall, you know, like I said, we've had a lot of discussion. We had a recall election regarding this, and frankly, I don't think it's clear at all, and many of the members I talk to don't at all support a return to a pension plan.
Representative Hinshute. Did you have a follow-up question? I apologize.
You know, I'm fine. Thanks.
Yeah. Through the chair, Officer Wright, so I also invest through an investment professional. You worked in that field for how long?
For 20 years.
And what kind of training did you have to become an investment professional? Because my person is constantly having to re-up. Did you have to do that? Like continuing education and.
Oh yeah, at the time, yes. Again, that was my career for 20 years. I do have an MBA, Master's of Business Administration. I had training throughout my time there. I was not a personal financial counselor. I actually, what I did at my firm, mostly in Chicago, before I did work in investment management in 5 years in Alaska, was specifically I was a director of mutual fund operations. Mm-hmm. And what I did was service pension plans, defined contribution plans, defined benefit plans, and provide services. And like I think I mentioned earlier, the transition from those pension plans to defined contribution plans, especially over the last decade of my career, was a lot of what I was overseeing.
So you're particularly well positioned to manage your own finances. You have expertise in that field.
That's correct.
Do your colleagues have that same expertise?
No, but not necessarily. But I think the notion that it's too difficult for regular Joe people to manage a 401k account, I think it's misguided. I think that we've seen 401k systems. Again, I mentioned earlier that average income Americans have reaped huge benefits from the move to a 401k plan. There are plenty of education opportunities available to the average police officer, and the entities that we use provide, and the municipality provides counseling and help with that all the time. Frankly, people just overcomplicate it. I saw in an op-ed the other day that teachers are at home working on their investments every night. That's a ridiculous notion.
That was my comment.
And I apologize for that. But I don't think, and what I mean by that is a long-term investment should not be reviewed every night. They should not have to, this should be something that you set in place. It possibly can be done with target-based investments. And it's not anything that shouldn't be able to be put in place with a very basic guidance from, at the beginning, and then you leave it alone.
Okay, thanks for that perspective. I'll just tell you that the people I know who teach a full day, which is not an eight-hour day, and then go home to their children, have a hard time making sure that their investments are in the right place. They often hire a professional to help them, but that's an added expense, and the risk is 100% on the individual, and it's not shared across a pool. The larger the pool, the risk goes down. And so by having that risk 100% on the individual, it can be monumental to take on trying to understand investment and get that right, because there's so much consequence to it. There's a lot of gravity to, will I live 90 years or 100 years, and how do I plan for that? So thanks for your perspective on
sure.
that.
Sure, and I appreciate it. And, again, I mentioned Fortune 500 companies, workers across the country have faced that dilemma. And part of that has been the challenge. There's people like the personal financial counselors, and there is sometimes a need to get professional help to help do that. That cost is much less than the cost of a guaranteed pension plan.
To the individual?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for being here, Mr. Wright. You had mentioned a recall election in regards to this subject in the APDEA. If you don't mind speaking to that, what was the results of that election? And what was the reason for the recall?
The reason for the recall is So I was the subject of the recall election on the APDA board, which I'm a member of. The reason for the recall was when this bill HB 55 was going through the cycle last year, I contacted senators, identified myself, I told them who I was, I told them I was speaking on my own behalf and not on behalf of the board. The union took objection to the idea that I was opposing their official position that didn't even exist. The union did not take an official position on HB 55 until very recently when I forced their hand, at least the union leadership. So the result of the recall election is I won the recall election. I'm still an APD board member.
Thank you.
Vice Chair McCabe, did you have?
Sure. One more, if you don't mind, through the chair, Mr. Wright. So since you're an expert in finance, do you see any difference in a defined benefit plan managed by the state and a 401k, other than the difference in whose money it is, than a 401k managed, say, by Fidelity or T. Rowe Price or one of the big firms? I mean, I have a 401k. That's all my retirement ever was. And it's done very well, managed by one of the big firms. So I'm not sure, and it's my money. It's not controlled by the company that I work for anymore. And if I die and if my spouse passes away, it moves on to my children and my children's children, my grandchildren. So my question is, what's the difference? What's the difference if in an actuarial or a fiduciary or a whatever you call the money manager for the state, and you doing it yourself? Just give it to Fidelity, say put it in this fund, or put it in funds for maximum growth or maximum stability. I mean, you can make that choice and then let it go for 20 years and be just fine, if I'm not mistaken.
The difference is an individual is always going to be able to tailor their portfolio investments much better than a state government entity is going to be able to do. I appreciate the idea that Social Security is a safety net for people, but everyone should recognize that Social Security is not going to be enough for retirement. And that's the bottom line. And frankly, any concept of this pension plan needs to be the same idea. If this happens to pass, every police officer should fully recognize that this pension plan is not going to be enough for retirement. And if they attempt to rely on that only, they are going to be in big trouble. And so they do, and the notion, we need to get to the idea that people do take responsibility for their own retirement program, and they will reap the rewards of that. Again, we've seen that. There are market risk. I've seen plenty of downturns. The biggest one was probably the 2007 one. But the market is going to recover. And frankly, if the market doesn't recover, then this pension is going to be the least of our problems.
Thank you.
Representative Hemshoot, just one more question. But we have a lot of folks on the line, and I think it's really important that we hear from as many people as possible. So.
Thank you, Chair. McCormick, appreciate it. Last question. I'm sorry to keep drilling away at this, but when it comes to risk, if I'm managing my own money, the risk falls 100% to me of getting that wrong or right. Whereas if I have a pension, that risk is distributed. And it's not even just the risk of the investment, but the risk of how long I'm going to live. So if I mismanage my investment with a defined contribution, and I end up living 100 years and I planned for 85, I have a problem. If I have a defined benefit, that risk is spread out because some of the people within a defined benefit system are not going to make it to 85, and others are going to make it to 100, and we can meet in the middle and provide for everyone. So do you see that differently?
I do understand those risks, but again, what I am suggesting is that the risk of essentially what becomes a guarantee in the pension plan, a guarantee that that stream of income will continue to exist until you die, is way too great. And or the cost of that guarantee is way too high. The outcome of what your overall portfolio is going to be much less than a well-established, a good 401k type system with actually good matching instead of the very feeble 2% that is currently exists.
Thank you very much.
Until recently, it went up to 4.
Thank you very much for your testimony and answering our questions, Mr. Wright.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
So also this morning that we have joining us in the room is Sarah Kennard. If you'd please come forward. Say and spell your name for the record, and then also let us know who you're affiliated with.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Kennard, Sarah with an H, last name C-A-N-N-A-R-D. I'm here representing the IAFS, the AKP FFA, and the local 4303. I'm a firefighter here at the Capital City Fire and Rescue. Good morning, and thank you all for your time here today. Like I said, I've been with the fire department here in Juneau for 2 years now, and this time last year, I was attending an IAFF conference for new members and departments across the West Coast region. During the conference, as I was meeting firefighters from outside my own department for the first time, updates from House Bill 55 were rolling in. Each time I introduced myself to someone new and they heard I was from Alaska, I got variations of the same comment. I can't believe you guys don't have a pension. One man even went so far as to tell me, and I'm not kidding, you need to move down here. You need to apply down here now. I learned over those 3 days just how drastically my pay and benefits paled in comparison to those from every other state in the room. Of course, I would protest time and again, attempting to adequately describe why I love my home and my department, what makes the sisterhood and brotherhood here so special. Plus, we were working hard to see this House bill come to fruition and see a pension created. But on the last day of the conference, the announcement was made in between presentations that House Bill 55 had failed. And in that moment, I felt the eyes of everyone in the room turn towards all the Alaskans, and you could feel the waves of pity roll over us. Because when it comes down to it, we all knew the truth. A dignified retirement after a career of serving in our communities matters. I do not understand how pension is not a significant contributing factor to lack of retention in the fire service. There's a great need for firefighters and EMTs across the state in this region. But unlike them, we have far less ability to keep people once they've come here, learned what they needed to, gained their certifications, had a couple adventures, become vested in their PERS account, and then went on to find a better solution at another state. I find it arrogant to laugh at the idea of being concerned about your retirement health benefit and possibly being up multiple nights trying to see where you might end up when you retire, if you even make it to retirement. As a firefighter, according to the NFPA, I stand a 68% chance of contracting some form of cancer, the leading cause of death in firefighters across the country. That number doesn't include the risk of breast cancer, which is not yet fully understood due to the historical lack of women in the fire service. I've lived here in Alaska for more than 10 years, and I made the transition to the fire service from a state marketing job. Firefighters are the most fiscally minded group of individuals I've ever worked with. The overwhelming majority are well aware that other investment solutions are needed to diversify their retirement health, but a pension is a crucial part of that diversity. It's not just my own future, but my partner's as well that I worry about. He too is a firefighter and a lifelong Alaskan, as are his parents. Neither one of us want to leave them behind. But at some point, what are our options? For now, I'm willing to stay with the hope that firefighters of Alaska will someday soon be afforded the same protection and securities as my peers down south. But if not, we may be forced
Thank
to
you,
join
Ms.
them.
Thank you, Ms. Kennard.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Questions? Representative McKay.
Yeah, through the chair, thank you, Ms. Kennard, for your testimony. I don't think that anyone is denying that firefighters shouldn't have a pension. I think it's what type of pension. And as Mr. Wright testified, there's significant benefits to a defined contribution program as opposed to the defined benefit program that's in HB 22. So please don't misunderstand. We love our firefighters. We respect and love our police and our first responders, of course. It's just how we go about this and what we end up doing is very important. And we're trying to make a very careful decision here because it affects folks all across the state for many, many years. So thank you for your testimony.
Do you have a comment?
If I may, I just would like you to thank you for that acknowledgement. And while I'm not a financial expert in any stretch of the imagination, I just would like to make sure that it's very clear that I'm simply here to represent what I know to be the majority opinion, especially of my department and myself, of course. Thank you.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thank you, and I appreciate your testimony. My son's a firefighter, so I feel your pain. I understand the camaraderie. I was a 20-year military veteran. And I did get the full pension that Representative Josephson talks about, which is no longer available right now for military folks. They have a blended retirement. So even our heroes, not that you're not one, but our heroes that are getting shot at every day over in the desert, wherever, are getting away from a full defined benefit, government-sponsored pension, if you will. They have what's called a blended retirement system now. So I'm curious. My question, I guess, is, does Juneau offer, you're a Juneau firefighter, my son's a Mat-Su firefighter, does Juneau offer any kind of retirement for you, or are they totally reliant on the state?
I am not the best person to give you a specific answer on that. However, we do receive some retirement, yes, from the city. The exact number that is, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but I can tell you it is not enough. If I may, personal anecdote, my mother, well, I'm not originally from Alaska, my mother and my father lived in Alaska, and my mom worked for the state. She was a tier one retiree, and even though she was only here for a short period, she was here during a time when it was very difficult to attract people from down south to come do these difficult jobs. She was here for a short time, but she still is very thankful and enjoys, health benefits even now, these many years later as a retiree. And I'm grateful that she has them. But like I say, with the things like the risk of cancer that you experience in this line, it's a little bit heartbreaking to know that those same protections are not in place.
Thank you.
Representative Mears.
Thank you for being here through the chair. I noted that you said that the pension is a part of your financial diversity for planning for your retirement. So you are taking personal responsibility for your retirement.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Like I say, sorry, am I allowed to?
Oh, please. Yes.
Apologies. yes. I guess I can't fully begin to describe to you the difference between working, with a group of very intelligent people in a very different realm of state retirement in marketing. In the fire department, you would be hard-pressed to go to a shift and not find at least once a month people sitting around the table, as you always do, talking about the ways in which they're thinking about, changing up their retirement or what the current market status is. Like, they're very fiscally minded, but if you were to ask them, do they not want an additional, like someone else watching over them, knowing what they're doing is the best that they can do. But we don't have that type of background to be able to know that what we're doing is enough. We're looking at 401ks as a very important piece of that. A lot of people have their own Roth IRA set up outside of retirement. So many different options that people explore, but sometimes not enough.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Rep. McKay, did you have a... Okay. Any follow-up questions? Vice Chair McCabe?
Nope.
No? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Kennard.
Thanks for your service.
Yeah, thank you for your service. All right. So if anyone is here in the room, I'm not showing anyone else signed up for testimony. So if you came here with the intent to testify, please make sure that you've signed up to do so. Otherwise, I'm going to move forward and start taking some testimony from some of our callers here. So, let's see here. On the phone, we have Ryan Frost. If you could state and spell your name for the record and where you're calling from and who you are affiliated with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Frost, R-Y-A-N-F-R-O-S-T. I'm a senior policy analyst with the Pension Integrity Project at Reason Foundation. We're a 501c3 nonprofit who have been a part of around 70 pension reforms over the past 7 years. We've utilized a lot of different plan designs to bring down long-term risk to the state and taxpayers. A few examples include Arizona's Public Safety Plan, which we built, which now has the option between a DB and a DC plan. Michigan public school employees who can join a hybrid or a DC, and the new Texas employees retirement system, which just started a new cash balance plan. Plan design is a really tricky issue because if you don't get it right from the beginning, it can be really hard to catch back up. I believe the state's currently dealing with that issue right now, as you're all well aware, with the billions in debt, your PERS and TERS plans that have been closed for quite a long time. And we had concerns last year with the design of the new plan, House Bill 55. It's not that I think the bill proposes is too generous or of a benefit, or that public safety benefits should never be adjusted if the body wants. However, typically we're not seeing a new defined benefit plan proposal with this much risk in year one. I know you've heard that it also eats away at some of the funding going down to pay the legacy debt I mentioned earlier. And so that will require additional state contributions. But there's also an additional 7% of pay that's going to be added to the cost as well. The difference between what the state pays into the DC plan now, which is 5%, and then the minimum of 12 in the new DB plan. And then additional funds will also be needed in the future if there's any bad experience in the plan, because as you've heard, it is a guaranteed benefit. And I think that's really key. The bad experience part is really key because the current investment return assumption being used in this bill is far higher than the national average. And that return assumption, it came down even from last year, but it's really going to need to come down a lot more in the near term, which is going to make the plan more expensive than people like in a simple fiscal note. And we also had concerns due to the way the annuitization is being handled at the DC service into the DB plan. Again, it's because of that higher discount rate being used. There was talk at the last hearing about this proposal almost passing last year. So kind of wanted to talk through kind of what would have happened if it did pass last year. So basically all public safety members hired since 2006 would have had the ability. We can assume most of them probably would have done it, to transfer their assets from their DC plan into the new tier of the PERS DB. This effectively means there's up to 16 years of liabilities in the plan on day one, and all priced at last year's discount rate of 7.38, which is, again, way too high with the way current market forecasts are looking. PERS then earned negative 6% last year. So all of those recently transferred liabilities that bill sponsor said would earn 7.38% didn't, and that tier would have, in year one, had a huge funding hole. You'd be looking at tens of millions of dollars in unfunded liabilities before the plan even reached a year old. Right now, it's really a race to get down to the 5.5% to 6% assumed rate of return for other pension systems across the country, and they're doing everything within their budget to do that. However, for some reason, this bill wants to start 125 to 175 basis points above that for a new tier, and that just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I used to work for the public safety pension system in Washington State. So I've heard a lot of the testimony of the past year and a half that Washington's stealing police and fire away from Alaska. I don't know that that could be true at some level. I don't know if I'd say the pension is the reason they're transferring. I'm not sure if you've seen the recent salary data for public safety in Washington. The average salary down there is about $125,000 a year for police and fire. Firefighters alone average over $130,000 a year. So most of the out-of-state police and fire I spoke to when I worked there pointed out they nearly doubled their salary.
Thank you, Mr. Frost.
Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Frost?
If you don't mind.
Vice Chair McKay.
So through the chair, thank you, Chairman. Mr. Frost, could you, I missed some of that because it was kind of fuzzy, but can you talk about the high risk that the plan is taking or this bill is taking on the assumption of what the return is going to be, if you will? Yeah, no worries. Maybe you could just expound on that a little bit. You got kind of fuzzy on our speaker, so.
I apologize. Through the chair. Yeah, so right now, if you look at kind of 10 to 15-year market forecasts for institutional investors, which public pension funds are, what we're seeing is that you can expect to probably earn somewhere between 5 and 6%, most likely the mid-fives, low-fives. And so every pension system across the country is really drastically lowering their assumed rate of return as quickly as they can. New York, for example, huge pension system, went down to 5.8% last year, the year before that. CalPERS is dropping down quickly. You know, these are huge plans that have hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars of liabilities. So it's costing them quite a bit of money to drop those rates because by doing that, it makes your present value of liabilities more expensive. And so there was concern last year, and there's still concern, I think, this year that I believe the current PERS assumed rate of return is now 7.25. And if you look at, and you could ask the ARM board this, what they expect their next 10 to 15 years of investments to return, but I can pretty much guarantee you they don't expect to earn 7.25%.
Thank you.
Representative Himshute.
Yeah, Mr. Frost, and it has been a little bit hard to understand. So through the chair, Mr. Frost, I think you were leading off with the salary of folks in Washington. Can you compare that to the salary of folks in Alaska? I don't know if that's where you were headed or if I just missed it, but is it comparable?
Thank you, Representative. I'm not 100% sure what the Alaska public safety salary is. I know Washington has one of the highest in the country. And I hear, when I used to work for the plan, the police and fire plan in Washington, I heard a lot from transfers from outside the state that one of their chief reasons was that in a lot of instances, they would almost double their salary by moving to Washington.
I see. So you don't know the average salary in Alaska, but it's safe to say that Washington is a high salary state for public safety officers.
Correct. Yes.
So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and answering our questions, Mr. Frost. Moving on now. I see we have, Michael Jensen. Who is called in, retired sergeant with the Anchorage Police, Mr. Jensen. State and spell your name for the record. Good morning.
Michael Jensen, MichaelJensen is my last name.
Mr. Jensen, you could go ahead with your testimony.
Okay. I was born and raised in Alaska, been here my entire life. I spent 25 years with the Anchorage Police Department, retired as a sergeant there. I've been retired for 2 years now, happily retired. I retired with a pension. So in the last 10 years of my career, I was very fortunate to work a bunch of different jobs. But my last 10 years, I was the training center sergeant, running the academy, basically, and then for the last 5 years, I ran the backgrounds and recruiting section for the Anchorage Police Department. So being retired, I still care about the department, this community, and the state. So I wanted to let you know that what I saw firsthand at the academy. Well, I can tell you there were some questions about the cost of running academy, and it's very expensive. I don't have those numbers. Some of that stuff I've kind of forgotten in the 2 years I've been retired. But there are some fixed costs for, like, with ammunition, and instructors was always a challenge. So to have minimum staffing on the street to patrol Anchorage, we didn't have enough staff to bring instructors on. So a lot of times when those instructors came to teach at the academy, which, by the way, was about a six-month academy for initial recruits, they had to bring them in overtime. So that came at a pretty considerable cost over the course of the academy. And then a lateral academy, if we're fortunate enough to hire officers from other departments, it was a little bit shorter than that for sure. But the challenges that we faced in the recruiting division were significant. Part of that was, I don't know that this is the most popular career field or was when even in the later years I was there. But I'll tell you that filling the academies was always a stress that I had, getting enough applicants to select the cream of the crop to fill these academies. And I've spent a lot of days and a lot of hours at recruiting, in those 5 years at recruiting events. And a lot of the questions I got, especially from lateral officers, was, do we have a pension? That was pretty much the first question we got from anyone working at another department was, does the Anchorage Police Department offer a pension? And if we didn't, a lot of them were thanks, but no thanks. And then with that was also asked by the officers that didn't have any prior experience, but it wasn't their first question. They had, you know, a lot of questions. And Alaska is unique. We have a lot of, you know, geographically, we're obviously a long ways from the lower 48, and a lot of, I think the pension really tied people to Anchorage, and now with the 401k, at least what I saw in the end of my career was a lot of folks would, with the 401k is very portable, and they weren't as invested in the department, and some of them, well, a number of them, we lost a lot of good officers because they could take that 401k and go to a different state. They may do 5 years here, they may do 5 years at another department, and then just move on to different departments. And we put a lot of time and energy and money into some really quality officers, and it was pretty hard to watch that talent.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Jensen.
Yep.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks, Mr. Jensen, if you're still online. I just have a couple of questions. One will help me figure out what it actually costs to train an APD officer. And the other one is just a general question. So what's the bump for an FTO from officer to FTO or sergeant to FTO per hour, or if you will, or per month?
Well, I know that would be very easy to get, but one phone call, I could give you that number. I don't want to tell you what that is. I don't have that off the top of my head. Like I say, a lot of that I don't remember anymore. I've kind of deleted some of that. But there is a and it's not much for the work that a field training officer or an FTO goes through to train a new recruit. I was a field training officer also in my career before I got promoted. So there is it's pretty nominal what they pay for a field training officer, and a field training officer only gets that pay. It's not much, but as a sergeant, there's a pay increase also. And unfortunately, I'm not going to lock in on a number on that. And it's changed since I've left. I'm sure there's been a contract negotiation since I've retired.
I appreciate that. And just one follow up.
Vice Chair McKay.
Did Sergeant Jensen, did you have a 457B available to you as a public employee as well?
I had a 401K and a 457. I'm not sure about the B. I was very lucky that my dad instilled some retirement ideas in my head when I was young, and being pretty frugal, I invested in both of those, the 401k and 457, during my time at Anchorage Police. And I will tell you, in addition, for those 10 years that I was at the training center, that's where our background recruiting section is located also, I for every single academy that went through, whether I was a training center sergeant or the background sergeant. About 3 weeks in the academy, talked to the group of recruits and encouraged them to invest in the 401k and 457 and talk to them about the time value of money and compounding interest. And I was amazed how many didn't do that. And the reason I did that is because in the latter part of my career, some of my coworkers and I had talked finances and a lot of them didn't know anything about it. So I tried to instill in the younger generation the importance of doing that.
Thanks, and thank you for your service. I lived in Anchorage probably during most of your 25 years, so I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and thanks for all the folks spending the time and considering this there.
Any additional questions? No? Well, thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Jensen, and, of course, thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
Next up, we'll take the caller from the city of Bethel, Lieutenant Chris Wingner. If you could state and spell your name for the record and begin your testimony, you have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. I'll make it quick. My name is Christopher Wigner, C-H-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-E-R-W-I-G-N-E-R. I'm currently a lieutenant with the City of Bethel Police Department. I've been here approximately 4.5 years. I spent approximately 20 years in Georgia as a police officer, and speaking on behalf of the pension plan, I've spoke to several of my officers and also speaking from my experience that was one reason when I came up here, I did stay also employed with my agency down in Georgia so that I could finish out my term to have the pension plan. So that I knew that when I retired after serving the public for the time I decided to serve, that I would be taken care of financially. Talking to some of the officers here and what I'm hearing about from them is, I mean, we're having a problem with retention, also in recruitment due to the fact that we are in rural Alaska. But talking to the ones that have made the choice to come out to rural Alaska and serve the people of Bethel, what I'm hearing from them is they're looking at the short-term goal. They're only looking at, well, I'm going to do the 5 years, and I'm going to take my money out of this 401k plan, and I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to go back down to the lower 48, or I'm going to go to the road system. I'm going to go somewhere else and use my money the way that I see fit. I think if we had the pension plan, it would give them more incentive to spend the more time here in Bethel to be able to have that retention plan. I've talked to some of the long-time officers here, which is very few here, and what I'm hearing from them is that they would love to have the peace of mind knowing that they can finish out their career here with the City of Bethel and have that pension plan, knowing that they'll be taken care of, that they don't have to worry about their finances. So I'm definitely, in my opinion, and the people that I've spoke to that have the longevity here, that doesn't have the mindset of I'm taking my 5 years and I'm just going to take the money and go, on which there again, it causes the retention problem here, is with the pension plan, it would give them incentive. There again, I'm responsible for recruiting, and I'm hearing the same thing from the lower 48 is, well, what can you offer me? Well, if I can offer right now, it's in 5 years, you're fully invested. So the next question is, so in 5 years, I can take that money and go wherever I want to. I like to be able to say to them, well, we have a pension plan. You do your time here, you build your pension up, and you'll be able to retire with the pension, kind of like I have done, where I'll actually be drawing two pensions. I'll be drawing one from the state of Georgia, and also would be drawing one from the state of Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and I appreciate you getting that in under the 3 minutes. Do we have any questions? Lieutenant, I do have one question for you. Could you speak to what retention issues look like in our community when we are not able to keep officers?
Yes, sir. Because of the safety issue, not only for the officers, but for the community. As I said, I've been here 4.5 years, and seniority-wise, out of a 20-officer force, I'm number 3 in seniority. It becomes a safety issue for the officers because we don't have the officers to back up officers when they're going to the stabbing, when they're going to a shooting, when they're going to a heated domestic. There again, also, it's a safety issue for the public because when we have two officers out on a heated domestic or on a stabbing call, as we had the other day, we have nobody to respond to another domestic going on. So us not being able to keep officers here in rural Alaska is an issue for safety all around for the community and for the officers due to that.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Wigner, I appreciate you having testimony today. I wanted to make sure I understood what you were saying, because you are active in recruiting folks to Bethel. When you have conversations with individuals who are thinking about moving to Alaska or moving to Bethel to serve with your department, does it seem, and what I gathered from your testimony was, potentially the individuals who eventually decide to move to Bethel move there with the idea that they could work for 5 years, gain access to their retirement or vest into their retirement, and then leave? Is it your opinion that because of our system of retirement right now for public safety, that our recruiting actually is set up to recruit people who want that? So essentially, we're not recruiting long-term people. We're recruiting people that want to just come, vest, take their stuff, and move. So is it the type of person that we are recruiting that is the problem, rather than actually having a recruitment problem? Is that, hopefully that question makes sense, but I'll leave that to you, Mr. Wigner.
Okay, if I understand what you're sitting there saying, no, I mean, we recruit the best that we can, but the problem is under the system that we have right now for the 5 years, it gives them an out. I believe that if you gave them more of an incentive to spend longer here, as, you know, there again, like I said before, I have 20 years in the state of Georgia, and everywhere I've worked at there, because of the pension plan, you had officers that wanted to stay, officers that said, I'm going to stay here another 5 years, or I'm going to stay here another 10 years, or I'm going to stay here another 5 years, or whatever it would be, so that they would get their full pension plan. What I'm hearing here, I mean, we're recruiting the best that we can, but the problem is they're coming here and they're sitting there saying, okay, well, the only incentive I have is to spend the 5 years and then take my amount of money that I built up in those 5 years and take it and go somewhere else, either the lower 48 or go, you know, wherever. So if I think I might have answered your question. If not, let me know.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. And that does kind of get close. I guess I need to be a little more succinct in my question. Do you think that our current system sets us up to recruit people who are planning to leave? That's, I think, a more succinct question.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Because there again, they have that short-term goal in mind. I can get the benefits regardless. If I stay there 10 years or if I stay there 5 years, after 5 years, I get everything. So why should I spend another 5 more years?
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thank you, and thank you for your service, Lieutenant. I'm interested to know two things. If you have a pension in Georgia, why do you need to go to Bethel to work? Or maybe a better question would be, could you survive on the Georgia pension?
It'd be the same thing. It's surviving here. Well, I chose to come to Bethel because I wanted to serve up here. It's something that I always wanted to do. I wanted to come out to Alaska to experience the experience. I had another officer that I had worked with down south that he had recruited me to come up here. And that's the reason I'm here in Bethel, because I chose to serve the community of Bethel. Can I live on that pension plan? That's debatable. It depends on how the economy is at the time. So that would kind of be hard for me to answer that.
Okay, I appreciate that. Follow up?
Vice Chair McCabe.
So the next question, of course, involves the golden handcuffs. So you say that people are leaving, they're waiting 5 years in Bethel before they get vested in their 401k and then they leave. What if you had a guy, and you're a lieutenant, so obviously you have guys under your command. What if you had a guy that didn't want to be there? He got to Bethel, and after 5 years of 30 below or however cold it gets up there in Bethel and all the snow, and he decided it wasn't for him. And now he has to hang around for another 15 years to get his pension. What kind of a police officer do you think he would be?
There again, I mean, you know, working in this for over 20 years now, approximately almost 25 years. You're going to have officers that are going to leave regardless of if it's 35 below or whatever the temperature is here. There is no perfect department out there anywhere. So, you know, I mean, even down south, you still have officers that will spend 2 and 3 years and will leave. So to answer your question, what kind of officer you would have, I think regardless of that, you wouldn't have that officer because they don't have that goal, that mindset of having that goal, having to say, I'm going to serve my community for, let's say, the 20 years and getting that pension. So, but I think that you would also get that officer that says, hey, I'm going to go there and do a good job. I'm going to progress in that department. I'm going to spend my 20 years there, and I'm going to retire under that pension plan.
Thanks.
Representative McKay.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Mr. Lieutenant Wigner, thank you for your service. This is Tom McKay, representative from Anchorage. I want to follow up with Representative McCabe's comments and a little personal history. You know, and I worked in the Alaska oil industry for over 40 years, and we had lots of engineers and personnel that would transfer up here from Louisiana, Texas, typically California. And, you know, after a few years, the dark, the cold, they'd want to go back home, or the wives would want to go back home, or the husbands. And to me, there's just a little bit of cruelty with forcing an employee to stay in a place where they don't want to be. And, you know, that's just intrinsic to living in Alaska. Alaska's not for everyone. And like I said, the dark, the cold, the remoteness. I think portability is pretty important nowadays. And to hold a person in a location that they don't want to be in, I really can't fathom that their morale would be very high and that that they would be a very motivated employee. I think if they want to leave, they need to leave because Alaska's frankly not for everybody. Thank you.
I totally agree with you on that point. You're not forcing them. Everybody has a choice of what they want to do. Just like we have some officers that come here, the opinion that that's all they want to do is be an officer and do patrol. Then you have officers that's just making that choice. Hey, I want to excel in what I want to do, and I want to progress in the department. And with the pension plan, you're giving them the same thing. You're giving them the opportunity to sit there and say, yes, I want to stick out. I want to progress with the department. I want to spend my career here in the city of Bethel serving this community and doing my job and excelling at my job, and with the end goal that I know that whenever I do decide to retire or have it, I'll be taken care of also as I've taken care of this community. So to sit there and say that you're holding them against their will, you're not holding against their will at any time that you can leave and chose to go somewhere else and possibly retire with that agency.
Any follow-up questions? I suppose one comment that I'll make, Lieutenant Wigner, perhaps you can confirm or deny this. I believe in Bethel we have a two-week-on, two-week-off schedule that affords our officers the opportunity to also travel home to say if they're from a place like Georgia or somewhere far, and a lot of our officers do take advantage of that. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct. Right now, out of our police force, we only have two officers that are currently employed, they're currently employed to actually Bethel residents. Everywhere else travels anywhere from Virginia, Minnesota, the Valley, or Georgia.
Thank you very much for confirming that. Any additional questions for Lieutenant Wigner? All right, well, hearing none, thank you very much for your testimony, and also just thank you very much for serving our community for all the years that you have. I appreciate your testimony and asking our questions this morning. So our next caller is from Seward, I believe, Police Officer Patrick Mesmer. If you could please state and spell your name for the record and begin your testimony, you have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Patrick Mesmer. My last name is spelled M-E-S-S-M-E-R. I've been a police officer for 23 years in Alaska. I'm also a board member with the Seward Public Employees Association.
Since 2006, I've observed that we've been losing people at a faster and faster rate ever since we've lost the defined benefit package for new officers. As the Tier 3 pensioners retire, the department has dramatically lost experience. And this, you know, like the other callers have talked about, at around the five-year mark, a lot of people just leave. They go to states that have a pension system. As our experience and staffing level has gone down, our ability to solve crimes and prevent crime has gone down. It's kind of like a double-edged sword. Alaska currently is the leader of all states in violent crime because of this, in my opinion. Under the Tier 4 system, the officers have a 401k system. They don't even have Social Security. If they went to work in the private sector, they would have Social Security and usually a 401 to go with it. We just have the 401k in most of the rural departments. Frankly, our retirement system right now for officers is the worst in the country. Having less staff puts our officers at risk as well. Like currently right now in my city, we work 12-hour shifts and we're alone. I had an incident in 2020 where I was called out to help another officer with a stolen car and a firearm case. I ended up getting in a fight with this guy and had a gun pointed at my head. Partly related to our staffing, we just don't have enough people to keep our officers safe all the time. Police officers are risking everything they have, you know, including their life, to serve their community. In Alaska in 2020, 64.6% of Alaska police officers were assaulted in the line of duty. That's the highest level in the country. This is a real brief thing for me. What I'm asking you guys is please do the right thing and reinstate our regional pension system. The opinion here of everyone in my department is they want a defined benefit pension. I've compared my wage, which is far lower than some of the troopers here, and my pension is still better than what they can do when they're projecting out their actuaries on the 401k. You know, it just makes sense to return us to a defined benefit so we can start retaining officers and actually hire new officers to staff our streets. Right now, we're at like 30% staff or below staffing. That's all I have.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Messimer. Does anyone have any questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much for your service. We really, again, really do appreciate your testimony. So next, we have an individual calling from Utqiagvik, Taylor Elbert. If you could state and spell your name for the record and also mention who you might be affiliated with, you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Taylor Elbert, last name E-L-B-E-R-T. I'm here today representing myself. I'm a lifelong Alaskan with generational roots back to the 1940s. I currently have the privilege of working in Utqiagvik, where I've spent more than half of my childhood and adult life. I'm a husband to another lifelong Alaskan, a father to three wonderful girls. I'm a firefighter, and I would like to express my support for House Bill 22. Currently, I'm the deputy director of the Northville Borough Fire Department and am enrolled in the State of Alaska Defined Contribution Plan. I can attest to the worries I have for my family's financial security should I continue to dedicate my professional life to the Alaska Fire Service. It's a service that I truly love. However, as an Alaskan, I would like to focus more on how our current situation affects our neighbors and our communities. I will attest to the great hollowing out that Representative Josephson mentioned in last week's committee meeting. Currently, my department has 63 uniformed positions. 28 of those personnel have 4 years or less experience. That's nearly half of my career firefighters with 4 years or less experience as a firefighter. In contrast, I only have 12 uniformed personnel that have 10 years or more experience. So the data in my service area shows that call volumes have more than doubled in the past 20 years. Volunteerism has decreased significantly. Education and technical training in our field is lengthier and more technical than ever before. Fire itself has changed over the past 20 years. Between the items in our homes, the furnishings, and then the building materials themselves, structured fires burn faster and hotter than they ever have before. Our communities deserve firefighters that have the experience to make tactical decisions in a timely manner. And that experience comes from longevity in the field. When I became a career firefighter, I had a short time with some of my department's greats. And I'm so grateful that I had a couple of years to learn from these great firefighters. but I'll humbly state that it wasn't enough time. And simultaneously, this created a void in our department for the firefighters that joined our team between then and now. And I would love to have a retention tool that keeps firefighters in our profession so that our incoming workforce has a chance to learn from these experienced professionals. So this is a statewide issue. It doesn't only affect larger cities, but it also affects rural communities. I believe that House Bill 22 is necessary to retain peace officers and firefighters that want to remain in Alaska. And I believe that this defined benefit will be a valuable recruitment tool as we strive to bolster our workforce. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Albert. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Albert. Thank you for your service, for what you do for the community of Uktiavik. Can you tell me, I'm interested to know, do you do the same sort of thing as most of the departments do on the North Slope, it seems, or at least the Bethel Police Department mentioned they do a two-on, two-off with their officers. So is it the same in your fire department?
Thank you for that question. It is not. We have a small division of the flight paramedics that work a rotational schedule. However, again, that's 10%. 12% of our department. The rest is non-rotational.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you through the chair, and thank you, sir, for being here and testifying for us. You had mentioned the hollowing out is real in your area where you're serving. Could you just estimate for me how many, or if there's been firefighters or personnel in your department who have left after 5 years of service to go somewhere else?
I don't have that data. It's a good question. I don't have that data, and I prefer to not speculate.
All right. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Albert, for calling in and providing testimony. And, of course, thank you very much for the service that you've provided for your community. Next, we'll hear from Alan Heineken of Fairbanks. If you could state and spell your name for the record, you have 3 minutes for testimony. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, my name is Alan Heineken, A-L-L-A-N-H-E-I-N-E-K-E-N. I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. I am a firefighter, or I'm a captain at the Fairbanks Fire Department. I will be speaking, however, for myself. I don't speak for my department or my union. Today my testimony is pretty plain and simple. I'm going to keep it short. A lot of people are talking about the nickels and dimes. A lot of people are talking about retention problems. I'm going to just speak about my personal experience and think outside of all that, because it's a bigger issue than the money. It's a bigger issue than that. We have people who want to be lifelong Alaskans. They want to stay here. They want to build families here, and they don't have the ability to do so. We have people who are leaving after 5 years because it's not economical to do so. I was born in Fairbanks. My dad came up here in the 80s, became a firefighter in the 90s, and I always wanted to stay here, be a firefighter here. My brother's a firefighter at the University Fire Department. My cousin works in the Fairbanks, or the Fort Wainwright Fire Department. And my father's still the fire chief out at the North Pole Fire Department. It's a big family, and all because of one person staying here, because of the retirement system, all of those people stay here. But if, say, that one person decides, okay, well, I can find a retirement system that's better and more beneficial for my family, I'm going to take it elsewhere. Now you've lost all of these lifelong Alaskan people who feed into the economy, people who feed into the overall system, people who are doing worthwhile jobs, all of them leave, all because one person made a decision. So I implore you to think about not next year's budget. Don't think about, you know, what firefighters are doing right now. Think about the firefighters, the police that you're going to have 20, 30 years from now, because those are the people that you're affecting by making decisions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Heineken. Does anyone have any questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Heineken, for your service and again for providing testimony this morning. We will hear now from Tyler Belk from Eagle River. If you could state and spell your name for the record and who you're associated with.
Good morning. My name is Tyler Belk, spelled T-Y-L-E-R, last name B-E-L-K, Bravo, Echo, Lima, Kilo. I am with the Alaska Professional Firefighters, as well as the IFF Local 1264, as well as a member of the Anchorage Fire Department, where I'm a firefighter paramedic. I've been a firefighter paramedic for 7 years now with the AFD. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. My family's been in Alaska since 1947, with my grandparents coming north after World War II, being stationed at Fort Rich and Elmendorf, respectively. And my family's never left. I was fortunate enough to graduate from the same high school my parents did, so on and so forth. My roots run very, very, very deep here. My family as well plans to stay here. However, with regards to this bill and the pension system for public safety, it's important. It's extremely important. As numerous testimonies come forward, you can see that these are the folks with boots on the ground that are requesting your consideration of this bill and the passage of this bill, quite frankly, to provide some financial security for folks. I take some umbrage with the notion that public safety doesn't have pensions in other states. I've been unable to find one. Even most conservative states like Texas and Florida, they still fund a public safety pension for their police, fire, and corrections. I think we've approached this numerous times for numerous years. You heard numerous reports. I don't know what further you'd like. So I guess at this point, I'm just appealing to you as a lifelong Alaskan, as an individual who values his job, loves what he gets to do. I'm at a pivotal point where I'm going to have to start making a long-term financial decision here with regards to that pension. And as a paramedic, I'm sought after all over the West Coast, all over the Central U.S., all over the East Coast. Some places like L.A. are offering a $50,000 signing bonus for paramedics to come down right now. Tacoma has a great pension system that's based on that left two out of Washington, which is extremely successful. I think that in the end, Alaska is going to have to make a move, or we're going to continue to face this crisis where folks are going to leave. But it's going to hit the rural communities first. It's going to hit Fairbanks just second, and then it's going to trickle its way into the AFD here in Anchorage and Juneau as well. Can't forget those down there. I think we're already seeing it, and it's just going to increase in intensity over the next few years here. That's pretty much it.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Belk. Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks, Mr. Belk, and I appreciate your service and your service to Anchorage. And I have one question. You mentioned that Los Angeles is offering a $50,000 signing bonus for paramedics to come down there. I just am curious if I heard that right.
That's correct. You'd have to look up the exact details of it, but it's based around service commitment, to my knowledge. So there is a shortage. I don't think anybody's going to shy away from that. There is a shortage of public safety, police and fire both. So firefighter paramedic is synonymous in most large departments like that. And so when they're short on people and they don't have enough paramedics to fill their ranks, which is providing the pivotal pre-hospital emergency medical service for a large population like that, they have the ability to offer kind of bonuses. I think for you, sir, in the MAP-2 Valley, you can see MAP-2 Regional Hospital offers a number of bonuses to recruit nurses, which is, again, something that's pivotal to make that cog run smoothly. Yes.
Vice Chair McCabe.
Thanks. So one follow-up. I appreciate it. Through the chair, Mr. Belk, the Los Angeles is offering a $50,000 signing bonus because they can't keep firefighters and EMS because they are short, kind of like Anchorage is, or like the state of Alaska is. Is that kind of sum it up?
Well, I think you can see that they offer a pension already and they offer numerous other things. And if they're offering this level of a signing bonus, I think that they're forecasting some pretty large shortages. And here we are in Alaska with no pension to bring forward at all. And I don't even think we could consider a signing bonus of any kind. Like, I think it's so far outside the realm of possibility. I think we're our best bet's going to move forward, hopefully with some type of a pension to at least make it attractive. I mean, we have a beautiful, wonderful state. I think we can all agree to that. That's transpolitical in a whole lot of ways, right? We enjoy living up here. We love this place. I think every Alaskan would do everything they could for Alaska. So it's time to make it a competitive as possible against things like that. But realizing that young folks, they're motivated greatly by, you know, a secure pay, or a short-term pay. And I don't know, that's something that we're going to have to compete with here, as we go forward in the next decade or so.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I just kind of wanted to highlight the fact that Los Angeles, California offers a pension plan and they're still having to offer a $50,000 signing bonus to recruit more paramedics and firefighters. I appreciate the information, Mr. Belk.
Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Belk, through the chair. Just a quick question. How long have you been with the Anchorage Fire Department?
I've been here for 7 years, ma'am. I served the Mountain View and Fairview community, as well as trickle into the east side. I work out of fire station number 3.
Thank you.
Representative McKay.
Thank you, Chairman McCormick. Thank you, Mr. Belk, for your service. I just want to point out that California is in dire financial straits. They're one of the worst states in the entire nation for public debt. They're on they're up in the top 5, I think, for in a lot of categories. And so we just don't want to get in that position. And it's a difficult decision, but I should point out that California is not exactly a model example for fiscal responsibility. Thank you.
Mr. Belk, if you had a comment to that, please feel free to make it that.
Sure. Yeah, my point with bringing up that is not necessarily to exemplify fiscal responsibility. I mean, I agree with you 100%. I don't think they are fiscally responsible. But regardless, we're competing with that as a department as far as recruiting people goes. I think that you've had police lieutenants, you've had multiple other officers with boots on the ground that have expressed this notion that they can't recruit people to come up here because the first question is, do you have a pension? And it is a stable question. That is a stable retirement. It's something that's characteristic greatly in this day and age, in the modern age, in today's day, to public safety. I think they've done away with pensions in numerous other areas in the world, especially different career fields and the like, but it's stayed pretty rock solid in public safety. And it's quite frankly a little bit embarrassing that Alaska doesn't have one, and we're losing out on recruits that way. And it's, I think everybody's coming to you with that same information time and time again.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you through the chair. Mr. Belk, thank you for being here. If I could just maybe sum up what you were saying briefly. I think I heard you say that shortage is essentially a nationwide issue and the state of Alaska is not competitive. Would that be an accurate summation?
I think that would be a great summation of it, in my opinion.
And a follow-up, if I could.
Please, Representative Ruffridge.
And I apologize for a very direct question here, but it seems to me, Mr. Belk, that you, as a lifelong Alaskan and having a lot of reasons to stay, are somewhat frustrated. Is that an accurate assumption on my part?
Yes, sir. That would be accurate. My frustration's derived in the notion that I'm seeing some of my best coworkers, some people that I respect greatly, with maybe not necessarily as direct a ties to Alaska. They're departing the state for these departments, and these are very successful folks. These are folks that will be foundations and pillars in your community. They may fill seats next to you one day down there in Juneau. I don't honestly know. But the frustration is derived more from the notion that we're losing great people, which is a tough thing to watch walk out the door every year.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Belk, thank you very much for your testimony this morning, and thank you very much for your service to your community and our state as well. Let's see. Next, we'll hear from Daryl Evans. If you could state and spell your name, where you're calling from, and who you represent. You have 3 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Sergeant Daryl Evans, D-A-R-R-E-L-L, last name E-V-A-N-S. And I am the president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association.
Thank you, Mr. Evans.
I'm calling in this morning in support of HB 22. I've heard a lot of testimony this morning and some comments from some of the representatives that I wanted to address as far as defined benefit versus defined contribution. One of the comments that was made was that defined contribution gives more portability to employees. I would like to say that I have read the bill, HB 22. If I misspeak, I apologize, but I do believe that there is a vesting period, just like there were in previous defined benefit plans. And I don't believe that the defined benefit plan does not make an employee completely, I'll say, unportable. But I know that for representatives, I think that we talk a lot about return on investment. And the numbers that were sent in regarding training and equipment for officers, if you want to take out the vehicle cost, we're still looking at approximately $150,000 spent on new recruits with training and salary in the first year that we have them, at least at the Anchorage Police Department. And approximately 10 and a half months of that time is spent in the training phase, which means that almost entirely the first year is spent in training. At 1 year in Alaska, an officer applies for and receives what is called a basic certificate from the Alaska Police Standards Council. That certificate is a ticket, if you will, to a lateral hire to another department. And it gives that officer a lot of ability to leave the state of Alaska at that point and get hired in another state. I will say that I've been through two police academies, the Department of Public Safety and the Anchorage Police Department, both, and I can say that we have some of the highest trained officers in the state, and that states outside of Alaska seek our officers for lateral hire. And so once they have that basic certificate, most officers are a shoe-in to go to other departments. On a personal note, I've been a police officer in Alaska for over 28 years. I started at Homer, and in 1996, I was hired with the Anchorage Police Department. Prior to my current position as a president of the association, I was a patrol supervisor. So I've also been a training instructor in the academy for both driving and firearms. So I've had a lot of close contact with young officers over the years, as well as a patrol supervisor right before this assignment. So I've had a lot of close contact with those officers, and I've seen those officers come and go over the years. Last year in 2022, we had 46 officers, sworn officers with the Anchorage Police Department that resigned for various reasons. Please don't understand my comment to say that all 46 officers left because of a lack of a defined benefit system. However, the fact of the matter is we had 46 officers resign from the department for various reasons. Our average academy numbers are approximately 20 officers per academy. So if you do the math there, we're not gaining any ground. Keeping up with attrition.
Thank you. Vice Chair McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Evans, and I appreciate your service. Thank you so much for what you do for Anchorage. And I'm looking at the spreadsheet that you guys sent for training costs, and I see a whole bunch of stuff that you're listing as training costs that actually belongs to the police department. So you don't issue a guy a patrol rifle and then when he quits, allow him to keep it, right? Or a drug testing kit or gun light or magazines, holsters, taser holster, rifle sling, all those belong to the police department, right? You don't just issue it to a guy and then when he quits, give it to him, right?
They do belong to the police department. Some items are items that are not able to be reissued, like drug kits, like you're mentioning, because those items obviously are one-time use type items. Some items, such as the gun belts, the holsters, things like that, it all depends on the wear and tear and whether or not those can be reissued. But yes, weapons, tasers, some of that equipment gets reissued. Correct.
Thank you. And follow up?
Vice Chair McCabe.
So, for instance, I see a Motorola radio listed as a training cost for $5,000, and all that is part of That doesn't go with the officer. It obviously belongs to the police department. So to sort of bring my comments from earlier in this hearing home, that can't be a training cost. That's not a training cost. For me, ammunition's a training cost. I'm sure a plaque that he gets at graduation, which I also see on here, could be a training cost. But anything that belongs to the police department, such as the patrol vehicle, the $5,000 Motorola radio, none of that is a training cost. So in parsing this and trying to figure out what we are actually losing, other than the experience, I get that, we need to have solid, rock-solid numbers to explain to our constituents why we voted for HB 22. So we need to know in the 6% that apparently we lose from the police department every year, we need to know exactly what it costs. And these inflated numbers, I'm sorry, but they're just not working for me. And, you know, I mean, I hate to be a stick in the mud, but if we're going to make an intelligent decision and we're paid to make intelligent decisions for our constituents, we need intelligent numbers. We need correct numbers. So I apologize for the rant, but I'm a little frustrated with that spreadsheet that you sent.
No further questions for Mr. Evans.
I have one.
Sure. Representative Ruffridge, we're swiftly running out of time here.
Yes, so. Thank you. This is a quick question, Mr. Evans. You said 46 officers resigned last year. I think that's what I heard. How does that compare to years prior?
Sir, this is my first year as the president of the association, so I haven't been privy to the numbers in the past. As the president, I am privy to last year's and this year's numbers as they progress, but I apologize, I'm not privy to the numbers in the past. I can tell you from personal experience in my time at the Anchorage Police Department that before my current role, my knowledge of people leaving the department is through retirement ceremonies and emails of people resigning and leaving the department. And I would say that those numbers are fairly consistent in the last several years. I can't say with certainty that there were 46, but I think they're very consistent.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony this morning, Mr. Evans. Unfortunately, we are unable to take any more testimony as it is 10 o'clock. I just want to let folks know if you would like to provide written testimony, you can send that to myself, Representative Josephson, or our committee. I want to thank everyone who took the time this morning to call in and speak their mind on this. We're going to be meeting again to have a hearing regarding HB 22 on Thursday at 8 a.m. I'm going to now set the amendment deadline for Wednesday, 12:30 tomorrow. I believe that's February 1st. Adjourn.